This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
We are talking about Japan.
Japan, yes. Which we have spoken about previously.
Well, it's such an amazing destination.
But not only Japan, we're going to also drill down on Japanese food in particular. Yes. So we've got a really quite a strong show here today. So you're on Joy 94.9, Fiona? Let's meet our guest.
Yes, absolutely. Zach Cribbs, executive chef and co-owner of Lucy Lou, which is a Pan-Asian restaurant that some of our listeners may know in Russell Street in the city of Melbourne. Welcome, Zach.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for coming in on your Saturday. Are you like normally...
Busiest day of the week.
Yeah, busiest day of the week.
So it's fine. You just got to pop down the street, yeah. Right around the corner from Joy.
Everyone else can do the work.
Yeah, everyone else is up there. Actually, to be honest, it's actually my day off. I'm lucky these days.
Oh, so you're senior enough to have Saturdays off.
Yeah.
The Crocs are at home.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, I've got... There's a heap of our guys that have been there since we first opened 4.5 years ago. So they've kind of all over what we do down there now, and I've got a head chef in place and 2 sous chefs, and they're really brilliant.
That's incredible.
Yeah, I've got a couple of kids at home, so it's nice to have the weekend off. Yeah, nice to have the weekend off now.
Are your kids old enough that you would be normally doing sport-related things?
Normally doing shopping-related things on a Saturday and sports. Today they're doing, there's like a Kinder Christmas that they're doing. Which I'll go to after this. And a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old. Yeah.
Well, we really appreciate you coming in on Saturday. Both Mark and I have eaten at Lucy Lou.
Good.
And I pass by there often, you know, on a Friday night when I'm around the city, and I always see it pumping with people. Yeah. So after 4.5 years, you're doing something right.
I hope so. Like, I think so. We've been lucky enough to be busy pretty much from the day we opened right through until now. So we're just sort of trying to continue doing what we do and staying busy into the future.
Yeah, well, it's a big call in restaurant world in Melbourne because it's so competitive.
It is, yeah.
Well, as a Pan-Asian restaurant, and when I first was talking to your publicist about bringing you on, I was like, well, what part of Asia are we going to talk about? Because there's so much incredible food. Mm. But you've recently returned from Tokyo.
Yeah.
And as I also have recently returned from Tokyo, and I love
it. Good thing to chat about.
Let's talk Japan. Now, listeners know, for those people that have been to Japan, how incredible it is and what the cuisine is like and the variation, and that if you haven't explored Japan... Get on board and get yourself a flight. Flights are so cheap. It's a fantastic destination. Go, go, go.
Absolutely.
So tell us about your travels to Japan and your recent discoveries.
Yeah, well, the last time I went, I've been 4 times. The last time I went was probably the best time in terms of food, because I've got a really good friend who I used to work with, actually. He used to be the executive sushi chef at when Taxi Kitchen was Taxi Dining Room, way back.
And you used to work there?
Yeah, I worked there for a few years, like in 9 to 11. And anyway, he's moved back to Japan. He's opened up his own little place now, a little omakase.
Fantastic.
A little 12-seater. I'll give it a shout-out. It's called Chiro, C-E-R-O.
And what part of Tokyo is it in?
Oh, God, in Ginza, actually. Ginza. It's actually in Ginza. Yeah, it's in like a little basement. It's just tiny little area. Anyway, I was lucky enough for him to take me around. And I think that's the thing about Tokyo is that there's so much. Mm. There is just so much to take in. Mm. And you really need either really good recommendations that you can follow up or a local. And taking a local, like take us around, was just the best experience. Like we were doing some amazing stuff, like beautiful little izakayas, great little yakitori restaurants, tempura restaurants, all the little individual places that were just absolutely brilliant.
Now, for those that may not be initiated, explain to us a little bit more about things like, what is an izakaya?
Okay, an izakaya is kind of like a pub. It's kind of like a Japanese pub. So there's sort of a casual, easy paced sort of restaurant where you can kind of order a la carte and you can get a beer and you can get bits of everything.
And it's rowdy and it's raucous.
Exactly, and it's
fun. And when you go in, all the kitchen staff, because it's often exposed kitchen, well, almost always.
Always, I think.
Open kitchen. They all shout at you as you come in.
Yeah.
How they greet you? Well, I can't remember now what they greet you with.
I can't remember either what they actually say, but I know that like it's like always welcome. The same thing. It's like campfire or something. It's like when you walk in, and then they seem to always be really smoky. Someone's always grilling something on the char grill, and there's always smoke, and the extraction's not great. And but they're just always a lot of fun. So we went to a lot of those.
So much fun.
Yeah, I had some pretty out there stuff. Some horse sashimi and things
horse.
Yeah.
Is that a
delicacy?
It's like from a horse?
From a horse, yeah.
No.
And they eat it raw. And I didn't get it. Yeah, I don't really get it. It was a bit...
Don't come the raw prawn with me.
Yeah, it's quite chewy. I didn't get the appeal of it. But anyway, you know, they do like lightly seared chicken, but they eat a lot of their chicken quite rare. Like just see it on one side and quite rare, which is a bit different as well, a little bit different.
And I love the way that there's a fantastic little spot which I visit when I'm in Tokyo where they get a side of mackerel. You get a side of mackerel and then they torch it in front of you. That's always really
good. Oh, yeah.
Creme brulee.
The brulee torch sort of thing.
Yeah. And they crisp it and then you get a little... Then you get a slice of lemon and you squeeze the lemon on and then it all sizzles right in front of you.
Yeah.
It's a theatre. So, yeah, izakayas are kind of, they're sort of like pubs, but they're not like a pub, really.
It's not like a Melbourne pub, but it's like their version kind of like a casual hangout place, you know, where you can go in and it's noisy and it's, you know, fun.
And
boozy.
And
with yakitori, for example, now there's a couple of different, you know, the idea of yakitori is things on sticks.
Basically, yeah.
But there are a couple of other variations on that theme.
Yeah, there's quite a lot, actually. Yeah, there's a few.
I went once into a restaurant in, I think, Osaka, and it looked really nice, and my friend and I didn't speak enough Japanese to be able to figure out that, in actual fact, all they served was chicken yakitori.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was fine for my friend who loves chicken, but I don't eat chicken. So
actually, we're going to come back and explore that a bit more. Japanese cuisine and the way that they present does differ to the way that a lot of other kitchens around the world do things. They are quite special. So we're going to talk about that just after the break. You're on Joy 94.9. You're in the Escape Hour with Fiona and Mark.
I was at work.
I was riding my horse.
I was microwaving a watermelon.
My iguanas escaped.
There are lots of reasons why you may have missed your favourite show, but don't worry, because our podcast team has you covered. They'll work through rain, hail and national glitter shortages to bring you the best bits of every show. Visit joy.org.au and click on the podcast tab, or head to the iTunes Australia podcast store and subscribe to your favourite shows for free. Thanks to our podcasters, you'll never feel guilty about missing a show again. joy.org.au.
Welcome back to the Escape Hour. We are currently escaping to Japan.
Except we're going to escape to Brad in Marvellous Melbourne.
Yes, we do. We have a new member. Go. Brad, thank you so much. From City Marvellous Melbourne, it is indeed.
Brad's had two things to say. Welcome, Brad. Thank you for sharing our Saturday afternoon with us on this glorious dove grey day.
Yes, a dove grey. He's such a poet.
Some Brad,
people
anything.
Would just go dull.
Anything for Brad.
Yes.
First thing.
They are listening to your podcast already having been to shul?
Yeah,
well, that's our question mark too. You know, we just don't know, and maybe. Why not?
Download all our podcasts to org.au.
Here we go. It's the phonetic pronouncing of what they say when you go into an izakaya.
Oh, here we go, yes.
Irashimase.
Irashimase.
Askai sama desu ka.
Askai sama desu ka. When you leave, meaning go and come back. That's right.
Yeah, right.
Hey, Brad, thank you.
Thank you, Brad.
You have...
Brad's all over it.
Domo arigato, Brad.
Domo arigato.
I'm sorry my pronunciation wasn't as good. I mean, no matter how many times I go to Japan, I can't always get it. My favourite trick in Japan is when you're in Kyoto, instead of saying arigato, you say okini.
That's a good inside tip.
Yeah. Apparently, it's sort of more common certainly in Kyoto, but in other parts. But it works magic.
Yeah.
Doors
are opened.
Everything, people, like little old ladies giggle.
Yeah.
People smile at you. They're so charmed. All you have to do is say, when you're saying thank you, is okini. Just think
okini.
Bikini is good. Okini, good.
Yeah.
So we were talking about kitchens.
Just off the break, talk to us about how the Japanese casual dining scene really specializes? Because I think that's a fascinating part of their offer.
Yeah, and I think it's something that's definitely unique to Japan, like around the world. And basically what they... In Japan, generally you'd find that you become a... The training is to become a chef is very intense. Like it's a... In general, it's about a 12-year process, especially for sushi and sashimi, wow. to actually become a proper sushi or sashimi master. So that's if you're just wanting to do sushi and sashimi. But you wouldn't learn anything about tempura if you did that course, if you did that training, like that training. So they're very, very specialised. You do a stream and you just do that stream the whole way through. So you have whole restaurants where these people have just been training or have been working in an industry or exactly the same dish for 30, 40, 50 years. And people at the restaurant would just be tempura and they would just do tempura or they'd just do tonkatsu. Or...
And that's the amazing thing about the highly specialised nature of the Japanese restaurants, the tiny, tiny little restaurants that just focus on one thing.
Yeah.
So what's the average amount of seats? So what's the smallest you've seen?
The smallest I've seen, the smallest I've been to is probably... Eight across the bar at the front.
I went to a really fine cocktail bar with seats for six.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
and it was a cocktail degustation that went for 2 hours.
Did you meet? Was it like one of those things you wanted to try to escape from, or was it good?
No, it was really good. But we were concerned that we were going to get really. It was going to be too much alcohol, but it was so delicately prepared.
Of course.
And it wasn't like, you know, sloshing a bunch of booze.
Yeah.
I mean, I have been to bars in Tokyo where they do slosh a lot of booze. But in this particular case, we were almost, you know, we were intoxicated by the flavours more than the alcohol.
Yeah.
Ooh,
yeah.
Now you're getting poetic. We're having a very poetic
Saturday. We can all have a go.
Well, pressure's on me now.
Exactly. Your turn. So that's fascinating what you just interpreted, because Japan has a very high tolerance for alcohol in their social life as a society, doesn't it? It's very accepting of quite a large consumption of alcohol.
Yes. What goes on at night at the work party stays at the work party.
Everything's a little bit of Vegas in Japan.
Yep. Because, you know, things aren't spoken of the next day. So, I mean...
I like that.
I have only travelled to Japan. I've never lived there. But, you know, I know people that have lived there and they go on drinking nights with their work colleagues. Inappropriate, crazy stuff happens and the next day... No one talks about it.
Silence.
So if you feel...
I wonder what the Japanese expression is, because they would have one. And it would be very...
I'm sure. Yeah, yeah.
If anybody knows, let us know what the Japanese expression for turning a...
I'm sure Brad will know.
Brad. Well, let us know, Brad.
Brad will be on it.
They do have an incredible tolerance. I mean, there's bars everywhere.
But it's a very highly accepted to consume a higher level of alcohol than you'd consider in most countries.
Oh, and another thing I noticed when I was most recently there, I was there at Halloween, which, of course, is a massive, massive party.
Yeah.
And we were at an event in Shinjuku, and one night we were trying to catch the last train, which we missed. And I noticed that there were... You know, people that were obviously drunk, just sort of lying, having naps on the ground, on the pavement. And the local security guards were just like...
That's something I'd say as well, that there is... I think you're right about there is that culture, but it's also very well mannered and very well behaved. There's not a lot of, you know, public...
Well, they're not shutting down the equivalent of St Kilda Beach.
No, exactly. There's not people getting...
And people were just lying there quietly.
Yeah.
And there was no police trying to move them on or anything. They were like, oh, well, they'll just sleep it off and then they'll be right.
Yeah.
Then they'll get back to another 18-hour day.
Oh, I know. They do work very,
very
hard.
They do work very, very hard.
Which I respect a work ethic.
Amazing work ethic as a culture.
But that then brings segueing right back to people that can, for 30 years, prepare a particular style of dish.
Yeah, I think it's a lot about discipline as well, which is a very big part of their culture, you know, discipline and strong discipline, strong understanding that you've got a role to play and that you will do that role. And I think that goes across all facets of their life from what I...
Indeed. I mean, their commitment to, you know, good service and, you know, enjoy, you know, making sure that their customers all love and enjoy their food and so on. They're very happy to please. I mean, I know that they don't do a lot of exceptions. So it's not like you can go in and say, oh, I'll have that dish, but I don't want that and I don't want that.
I'm
can you take out
free.
Me? They don't do
free.
A lot of exceptions.
Sorry. Yeah. No, there's not a lot of that.
What do they do when people ask for... Can I have that without the wasabi? Do they just recoil in horror?
Look, you know, I don't know because I've never...
Nobody would dare.
I haven't. I mean, I think that the challenge is that in a lot of restaurants, you know, there's still a lot of people who don't speak any English, of course. Mm. I mean, you've got your wait staff on the floor that will speak a little English, but there are some restaurants where if it didn't have a picture to point to and say that's what I want. I've looked at so many pictures, so many restaurant menus and go, does that look like it's got pork on top or is that chicken? I can't tell.
Well, I think the best thing though is like when you're going into those small little places, like it might be a ramen joint or a tonkatsu joint, and it's all on a vending machine. You don't have to speak to anyone, which is great. I love that. And it's all pictures and it's just a vending machine. You pop in number 72 and you guess what you want.
For listeners, let's talk about tonkatsu, which is a massively popular dish.
You want to pork, basically, like it's like fried.
Just like walked out of the sty? Or
so basically, fillet of pork, like, and breadcrumbed, but like in really high quality breadcrumb.
Panko, yeah.
But there's all different types of panko. And there's like, that's how particular it gets. So you can go to a tonkatsu restaurant and get, like, they have their own panko, they have their own breadcrumbs, with their own type of pork that they've bred, with their own sauce that they serve with it. So basically, it's a fried battered pork, like a schnitzel almost.
Yeah.
Basically, crumbs, normally served with crumbs.
Crumb cutlet.
Yeah, crumb cutlet. Incredibly dry, though. So not dry the meat, but the actual, as it's fried, it comes out like incredibly dry. Actual breadcrumbs. None of the oil seems to soak in. It's just perfectly crispy, but really, really delicious. Normally served with like a soy-based sauce, a fresh cabbage salad to sort of lighten it up a little bit. Really, really delicious.
And also, of course, there is quite a lot of etiquette around eating in Japan, which I just really love because, I mean, I know we have manners here that are built into us as children, but this is really... If you are going to Japan and you do want to eat and you don't want to be, like, don't eat like a tourist.
Yeah, that's right.
For example, what are some of the things that people should be keeping in mind?
Well, look, I am not an expert on this and I don't have good manners most when I'm in Melbourne. But some of the things that Kenji, my mate, was telling me, like a few little things, that especially when if you're at a sushi or sushi restaurant, with your little nigiri, so yeah, that's your fish on top of the rice, the little ones. When you're dipping it in the soy, you'd have to make sure that none of your rice grains end up in the soy. That is a big, big no-no.
It's hard too.
Yeah, it's hard as well.
It's like leaving the butter in the Vegemite jar.
Exactly.
Oh, no, that's very gross.
Yeah. I mean, that was one. The way you're supposed to hold your chopsticks or place them after a certain meal. Certain things that you're supposed to... Often you go to a lot of the really great restaurants I've found that I've been to over there, what was called like omakase. So it just basically means I'll leave it up to you or...
Chef selection.
I'll leave it. Yeah, that sort of... Mm. And so basically it's like degustation almost, but it's you don't really know what's coming. And a lot of these, they don't speak a lot of English. Which is fine, you know, I don't have any dietary issues or anything like that. But some of those things are ready to eat. Some of those things need to have an extra thing added that you're not sure about. I've had the problem where, like, I've gone to eat the dish that's been placed in front of me, but it isn't actually finished yet. He's coming back over with the fresh wasabi and then you get a really dirty look. Like,
you're doing it wrong.
You feel really bad because.
Well, I mean, you probably made the slipper mistake before.
Yeah.
Oh my God, the slippers.
Oh. Talk to us about the slipper mistake. This seems like it's got a basis in factual reality.
One of the things I love the most about Japan is slipper etiquette and the hilarity of getting it wrong. So when you take your shoes off, there are slippers that walk you through the house. There are slippers that you can go into the slightly outdoor area, but not outside. And then there are bathroom slippers, of course.
Just for bathroom.
Just for being in the bathroom. And that is when you take off your slippers at the door of the bathroom. You put on your bathroom slippers to go to the bathroom toilet, which is two steps. Then you come out two steps and then you take those slippers off and then you put on your slippers for the house.
Yeah.
And, of course, when you do get it wrong in a restaurant situation, it's highly humorous watching – well, it's not humorous, it's deadly serious because people chase after you and go, no, you've got the wrong slippers on.
You've got the bathroom slippers on the dining area.
So it's a highly regulated slipper system. And
they should have notices up at the airport.
They will.
There's a lot of blogs. You can get online and, get onto some slipper etiquette blogs.
Is that what the Japanese slipper cocktail is?
I don't know if it has anything to do with etiquette, but I know it's very tasty.
Yeah.
It's green. Anyway,
go on. No idea what's in it.
I don't know what's in it either. Yeah, we will look it up.
Yeah.
For sure. So, so you put your chopsticks on your little chopstick holder. They have chopstick holders for a reason. You don't rest your chopsticks
on the plate.
On the plate or in the bowl.
No.
Because that's a sign that someone just died. Or something
is
like that.
Is it? Oh, I didn't know that one. Yeah.
Oh, that's... And,
Whoops.
I just caused more deaths than Stalin, I think.
Soy sauce usage. Yeah. Of course, it's inappropriate to ask for extra soy sauce because, as you just say, the item of food you've been given has generally been seasoned to the desired effect by the chef.
The guy behind the counter is going, I've been doing this for 60 years and only this. I know what I'm doing. You don't need soy.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, I've news in from the Joy research pigeon. A Japanese slipper is a drink made from Midori, Contro and lemon juice. It was created in 1984 by Jean-Paul Bourguignon at Mietta's restaurant in Melbourne.
Mietta's?
Actually,
there you go.
I can tell you something.
Up the road.
I have
Thank you, Paul, the news pigeon.
I have drunk the Japanese slipper at Mietta's. I was going to say, the one before we discovered that I had one in...
At
Mietta's, but I thought... Oh, it was probably invented in
California. Well, surely
California.
Somebody out there knows why it's called the Japanese slipper.
It doesn't
invented
say.
In Melbourne.
But the way that they used to serve
Paul,
it at
the
Mietta's
news pigeon, had no idea.
Was it had a beautiful piece of cantaloupe that cantilevered off the edge of the glass.
Cantilevering cantaloupe.
It's a day of poetry for you.
That's good.
It's the poetry hour.
Good. I'm on a blog called The Cantilevered Cantaloupe.
Sponsored by Midori.
Yes, that's a good idea. I'll get onto them straight away. So, Zach, now, some other food discoveries that you had, because every time you go to Tokyo, of course, there's an opportunity to discover something new.
Yeah. In Japan, like, I think you find new stuff all the time. There's the Wagyu sandwiches I love. I know we were talking earlier off air about the egg sandwiches, which are a thing.
Which I made my colleague Bianca, who recently went to Japan, eat on a daily basis. She loved them.
Yeah.
They're good.
But the get them very, on the menu. Very, like, high-quality Kobe Wagyu, thinly sliced on white bread, so basically char-grilled off, or flat-grilled off, actually, and then, like, on a teppanyaki grill, and then sliced into sort of, like, long slivers, and then piled into a white bread sandwich, which is
just a kebab.
Yeah, no, but it's like two slices of white bread.
And it doesn't make the bread soggy?
No. Like, they drain it for a little bit, right. And it is soggy a little bit on the top and the bottom, but it's like, if you can imagine the two edges of a sandwich are pinched together, and there's a mountain. So when you cut it in half, you see, like, this sort of, like... rounded sandwich filled with wagyu, which is absolutely delicious. A little bit of Japanese mustard in there as well, which is called yokorishi, which is absolutely delicious. Very, very strong. And I suppose, like, just all the little incidental things. I reckon the best ramen I've ever had in my life was at a bus exchange. We were actually outside of Tokyo. We're in Nagano. We were going to the ski up in Hakuba. And we just pulled into this bus station. It was another half an hour wait, and it was just one of those little things. There was a guy there. There was maybe six people sitting down, big hall, and this ramen was just out of control. And I think that's the thing about Japan, is that, like, you can be anywhere and you can have some of the best food you've had in your life.
Anywhere.
It's and it was just mind-blowing. And I was one of those ones that I remember so clearly.
Yeah. Well, I actually had a ramen experience, which I will keep brief before we go to the next break. I had a ramen where the stock was pork and sardine.
Pork and sardine? Pork
and sardine. It was the special place that we had to go to Tokyo.
Yeah.
And it was pork and sardine, so there's no there's slices of pork, which I did not get, but it's pork and sardine in the stock.
Well,
there you go. There's my ramen story.
I never have put those two flavours together comfortably.
But that strong, salty sort of...
And it also made the stock really oily.
Yeah, which is what they love. They love that. Yeah,
and
yeah.
Actually, to be honest, I don't eat pork, but I thought that this was too good to resist.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
A couple of messages in, Fiona.
Well, our newest member, Brad, you see, this is one of the great things. You can become a member and you can just send us fun messages and tell us things about Japan.
Actually, by looking at Brad's membership number, he's been a member for a very long time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, Brad,
it's number
thanks
one.
For being a member for a really long
time. But you're so young in our eyes, Brad.
That's right. Slurp your noodles. It's not considered rude not to slurp. The louder the slurp, the more you appreciate the dish.
Yeah,
you
one
would
of the
agree,
best.
Zach.
Yes, absolutely.
And so, Brad, our not so new member, thank you. And
Mark.
We have. Mark.
Not me.
No, not you. So, Mark.
Mark beat me to it.
That's right. So, we were just talking about Japanese slippers, which, of course, are not Japanese, but born and raised in Melbourne.
Miettas.
How, he says, after two Japanese slippers, it's more like a Korean thong. Ha ha.
Yes. Let us know your Instagram handle. It looks like it will be interesting.
I feel like I'm going to have to go home and make Japanese slippers for some cocktail party coming up. I mean, it's, it's a very summery drink after
it is,
all.
With a cantilevered cantaloupe.
Cantilevered. All right. So we digress. We are here with Zach Cribbs from Lucy Lou. We are talking all things Japan and recent trips and recent travels and recent discoveries, of course. Now, what did we say we were going to talk about next?
Oh, I think I mentioned to you off air about the first time I ever went to Tokyo.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was me and my wife, and we landed. It was 45-odd degrees, I think, 43, 45, something like that. It gets incredibly hot in Tokyo, like incredibly hot.
Steamy too.
Yeah, and then it snows, so it's got a bit of everything. But it we arrived and it was just too hot. I mean, it's just too hot to do anything. So we actually ended up spending pretty much the whole day at the bases of train stations, just meandering and walking through these shopping centres, which is basically you can walk underground for hours and hours and hours on end and ending up in all the food courts. And we basically did like a tour and just went to all these food courts and we bought all this food and we had like three or four shopping bags worth of all different types of sushi and different sashimis and different rice dishes and noodle dishes and fried dishes and everything. And we just went back to the hotel, bought a few Sapporos from the 7-Eleven, which you can do there, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And just sat in the bed in the hotel, had one of the best Japanese meals of my life. It was amazing.
That
it was
is
just
one of the most incredible things about traveling. The trains are, of course, a major focal point at the train stations. And underneath, they have the miles and miles of food outlets. Mm. Most of them take out, but some of them where you can sit and grab a quick bite before you go.
Yeah.
But you can buy endless arrays of cookies and biscuits because of that Japanese tradition, which is not just a Japanese tradition, but if you go somewhere, you have to take a gift.
Take something
with
you. And
it's a gift of food.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether it be anything you can imagine down there, delicious. It could be like dried octopus. It could be mochi balls. It could be pastries.
Yeah, absolutely anything.
So
like anything your mind can think of.
Yeah. When in doubt and you arrive at a train station, don't be shy. Just go downstairs and just wander
around.
Take
the escalator down. And then, I mean, you would find that it was so much fun because you'd get there, you'd go down there and you just start walking and they're all interconnected. And eventually you end up and you're, you know, two suburbs across 2.5 hours later and you come back up and you're like, wow, we've been underground this whole time, but it's amazing. Like it's such a cool way to explore.
You know, I was reading a blog the other day about while I was trying to get to the train that takes you out to Narita, and the Narita Express, and I really didn't have that much time, a little tiny window, and I needed to make sure. So I read a blog on when you get off at the train station at Tokyo train station, because it's like a city underground.
It is. It's insane.
And it actually, there was like a 3-page document which described all the steps that you would take to get there.
Yeah.
But of course, because of the Olympics coming, there's a lot more signage. So for anybody that feels anxious about going into a place where you think everything's in characters, there is a lot more sort of English signage and things like that.
Yeah. I wouldn't say it's a super I would say navigating the train system is hard for about the first day, but once you get your head around it, the two different, the LRT and the other one, once you get your head around it, it's totally fine.
Absolutely.
Like, yeah, and it's so efficient.
And get a Suica card.
Yeah, exactly. And you can get absolutely anywhere you want to go within a couple of hundred metres pretty much if you use both of the stations. So
I do think that, like whenever you travel, eating is part of the adventure.
Of course, yeah.
And
definitely for me.
As a chef, that would be what you would be travelling for.
Travel for that. Yeah. And now it's got to the point where we travel just particularly for that. I mean, just last year we spent 5 days in KL just eating. Just in KL, just eating street food all over, which is just incredible. Like, absolutely incredible.
Oh, well, we have to have a whole other conversation about street food.
Yeah.
So now we were talking about street food. So Osaka is the home of street food.
Yeah.
Tokyo street food scene is not as vibrant.
No.
What do you think that is? Is it the built environment, the size of the city?
Probably the built environment, I reckon.
Yeah.
I mean, you have,
because it was wiped out after the war, so it was rebuilt.
Exactly, yeah.
Like and a lot of German cities aren't.
There's still some neighbourhoods where you get the little sort of, laneway, like, sort of areas and stuff that are still really great, but not as much street food. I think it's more just maybe it's a cultural thing as well. Osaka's definitely the best known for it. My favourite are those little takoyakis, which are like little deep-fried, almost like bechamel, like roux, like sauce, with pieces of octopus in it.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and they're like little deep-fried round balls. As I get, like, you normally get like 5 or 10 of them in a little bamboo boat, and then they put tonkotsu sauce, kewpie mayonnaise,
shaved bonito.
Bonito's like a relative of the tuna, like, so it's like a fish which they dry out and then shave it really, really fine. It's what they use to make miso, like the fish component in miso soup. And then you eat those, and they're just amazing. I remember we had some of those in the snow in Hakuba. Just incredible. After a day skiing, you come down and you're freezing cold, and you've just got this beautiful, like, delicious, salty, sort of sweet,
fried
octopus balls. You're just like, oh, they're so good. Yeah,
and I think the other extraordinary thing is that with the Tokyo food scene is, while we are talking a lot about Japanese food, they do so well. French, Italian, they make incredible pizza. I mean, have you?
Yeah, I had I can't remember the name of it. I'm sure I'll find it. It was, it was on one of those shows. I think it was Ugly Delicious or one of those shows.
Is Ugly Delicious the one with the really
David? Bam Bam. Yeah,
yeah, the big guys.
Action Bronson. Yeah. And David Chang. The pizzas, they have like some absolutely incredible pizza places there, like proper Italian style pizzas made by Japanese guys, but some of the best in the world. And these guys on this show were like, it's the best pizza in the world. So we went and we checked it out, and it's pretty good. It's bloody good.
I had some incredible Michelin star French food when I was there, which was like when you stepped into this tiny little it was like being in Paris with the same chairs and everything.
Yeah.
Well, we are going to go for another break. Wow, the morning or the afternoon is skipping along.
It is.
I have a live read.
Which is funny enough, we're thinking about that $5 thing, and guess what next
one is? Oh, my goodness, there you go. I have been tuning in.
It's a day of poetry and kismet.
Did you know it's never been easier to support Joy 94.9? Just pick up your phone and text the word JOY to 19949949. Let me do that again. 19949949. And donate $5 to JOY 949. Now, I know everyone has their phone on them all the time, so it should be easy. That's JOY to 19949949. That's $5. Donation appears on your phone bill and is tax deductible. T's and C's apply. Visit joy.org.au for more information. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLB, TIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to the Escape Hour. This is Fiona. Fiona and Mark here with you today. Whatever you're up to, I hope you're enjoying it and not getting too sweaty. I hear a rumour it's pretty humid out there. I have not been out since early this morning, so I'm keeping it cool in the studio with our special guest, Jack Cribbs from Lucy Lou, just down on Russell Street.
Around the corner.
Just around the corner. So I will just add in one little piece of feedback we have from our great member Brad, who's now out of range. He just said it's been lovely listening. He is driving out of range, so he won't hear me call out his message. Been nice talking a brief trip down memory lane to living and working in Japan in 1990. And of course, there are a lot of gaijin, which is non-Japanese people, but they are living in Tokyo and working in Tokyo. And so they always bring a perspective. And so if you're going, one of the things you can always do is get on your favourite search engine and hunt out people's stories about their travels in Japan and pick up some great tips. So, Zach, picking up great tips, what sort of things do you pick up while you're in a place like Tokyo that you bring back to the kitchen at Lucy Lou?
Oh, well, one of the things that we try to do a lot of at Lucy Lou, which is something that is kind of, you see a lot of, and I think they kind of pioneered it, it's very popular now, is the interaction between the chef and the diner.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so we've got, like, at Lucy's, we've got, like, about 16 seats along our kitchen bench, which pretty much you sit all the way along. We don't book those ones, like, they're just for walk-ins, just a casual space. But we really encourage all of our chefs to really interact with the guests. Mm. And that's something that I saw so much of the times I've travelled to Japan, and sitting at these little, either it's a little sushi counter, could be, you know, at Tsukiji fish market, or it could be wherever. Mm. And you get that real interaction with the chef. And as a customer, I always loved it. And I always talk to my guys now, and sort of like, I know it can feel a bit awkward sometimes as the chef when you're trying to work and you're trying to do that stuff, but as a customer, you love it. And I think that whole idea.
I love it, sitting at the bar.
Yeah, sitting at the bar. And that whole idea of, I suppose, hospitality, that, you know, like, I mean, obviously I bring ideas and concepts and dishes and sauces and, you know, we've done specials specifically designed from stuff I've eaten in Japan. But that whole idea of hospitality, that whole idea of really caring about the customer and sort of being like, oh, let me
engaged.
Give this. Yeah, engaged and kind of like, let me give this to you. Have this, you know, like that's very much like.
I think that, you know, Andrew McConnell was a little bit of a pioneer in that area.
Yeah.
Because all of his venues, well, a lot of his venues have very, very, very long bars.
Yeah.
And it's not just wait staff that bring you your food, but it's the chefs that bring you your food.
Yeah.
And you can crack a joke with them.
Yeah, yeah.
They may not smile back, but they might.
Because they're busy as hell.
Yeah, or they might crack a joke with you. Or
because they're wearing Crocs.
I try not to look at their feet, but I do understand the practical purposes.
Yeah.
Broken Crocs.
So
that idea of hospitality, really, that idea of really caring for the customer and wanting to do that. You know, in a venue like ours, it's a big venue, it's busy, it's, you know, fast-paced, and there's not a lot of time for a lot of that. So just the idea of doing it, like, is a really nice thing to bring back from Japan, that care about the care about everything.
Yes, they do, and they care about their ingredients. I mean, that's one of the things in Japanese culture is the obsession with ingredients.
Yeah.
You know what I want to do is I need to know how to do Japanese pickles.
Oh, right, yeah,
I just
came
back recently and I was obsessed with the idea of, now, is there anything particular about pickles in Japan that make them so special? I mean, there's pickles around the world.
You know, I think it's mostly the types of vinegars.
Right.
Hundreds and thousands of types of vinegars, different types of vinegars and different sugar ratios and stuff, and they're all very particular to the pickle. So a different vegetable with a different type of vinegar.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, up to some points, absolutely.
Because, you know, when you sit down at some, there is a dining style which is not where you get all of the little dishes in one go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm trying to remember the name of that dining style. I will look that one up.
Yeah.
And you get...
Moriwase?
Sorry, what was
is
that?
Is it Moriwase?
Moriwase is like a, that's like a large, like a selection, chef's best selection of like highest.
The top 10.
Highest. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Ah.
But that's normally for sushi and sashimi, yeah. You get it all
but
at once,
is,
though, yeah.
I think it's called a kaiseki.
Oh, kaiseki. Yeah.
So when you're sitting at a restaurant or you're staying at a ryokan, and you, which is a small hotel, and you have a kaiseki menu, they basically put it all there for you. So it's actually sitting at your table waiting for you when you come in.
Yes.
And you sit cross-legged in most cases, but not always. And there's like 14 tiny little dishes. And of those 14 little dishes, at least four will be each little pickles.
Yeah.
And it's so heavenly because you just get this, it's like it'd be a kid in a candy store. You're like, what am I going to eat first? Or this pickle, or this pickle, or this egg. And you just get so excited.
Oh, yeah. I love the pickled mustard leaf. They do pickled mustard leaf. It's absolutely delicious.
Pickled mustard
leaf. I know, it doesn't sound great. I know, but it's just, it's delicious.
Not that it's octopus, really, when you think about it. They're delicious, but it doesn't sound like a great... Have you seen an octopus alive?
Yeah, that's true.
Or an oyster. Scary thing. I mean, come on. I mean, they're delicious, but looked at an oyster and said, you know, I'll smash my teeth trying to get that
I feel sad for octopus because they're really smart.
Super bright. So are cows. Cows like to play catch.
Is that right?
That's going to put you off your lunch.
Oh, my God. That's right. It's a good thing I generally don't eat cow, so I'll be free from guilt today. And then we were talking about some other little tempting things like shiso leaf.
Yeah, yeah.
What is shiso leaf?
Shiso. Yeah. So it's a herb, basically. It's a leaf off a small bush. It's sort of got pointy little edges. It's about the size
like
of a playing card. Like large. Larger and softer. So sometimes, you know, if you go and if you ordered a Morowasi, like a sushi plate, you'd get your sushi and then behind it sometimes is a green leaf.
It's a decorative item.
It's a decorative item, but
you can
edible.
Eat it.
Yeah, and you're supposed to eat it. You're supposed to wrap the fish up in it.
And it's called beefsteak plant.
Beefsteak plant, that's right, yeah.
In English, we've gone back to the poor cows.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's it.
That's
beefsteak plant.
And it comes purple or green.
Yeah. It has a very distinctive flavour.
Very distinctive, sort of almost...
How would you describe it?
It's a little bit... I don't want to say medicinal because that sounds bad, but it's
yeah, German
herbaceous.
Herbs are very... Yeah, medicinal. Yeah. We call them Kräuter, which sounds medicinal. Yeah. But they're not always supposed to taste good. They're supposed to taste healthful.
Yes.
So maybe it's that approach.
I would say that it has a slight little licoricey sort of flavour in there.
Aniseed maybe.
But it's not at the same time. Subtle.
Yeah.
And it's very distinctive.
Yeah. So it's like kind of like a grassy sort of licorice, like a grassy sort of licorice flavour. But it works really well with the fish, if you're having it with fish or if, you know, we used to do it. We'd do it tempura, so we'd tempura the leaf
I've had that.
Tempura shiso leaf just with ponzu. Is just
so
delicious.
I think that one of my recent, I mean, you know, tempura, but when I was there, I for some reason fell in love with tempura again.
Yeah.
Because
it's just so good.
I had some excellent tempura and I just loved the subtlety of just dipping it in the wasabi salt.
Yeah.
That's so fine.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have, sometimes you don't get any much ponzu, so you're just dipping it. I went to a tempura restaurant in Shinjuku and there in front of you is three different types of salts that
you can dip your
So there's a pepper salt, there's a wasabi salt, and then there's a
chimichurri pepper or something. Yeah.
A different one.
Yeah.
So all those wonderful little tiny variations. So I think that...
Subtlety is definitely one of the amazing things of Japanese cuisine.
It is.
Just like you can have just the tiniest amount. And I think that that's, you know, even down to the tiniest amount of wasabi, the tiniest amount of the salts, that all those little things that they add. It's absolutely delicious, yeah.
Brings back to discipline again.
Which
respect
is, I suppose,
for tradition and culture.
Respect for tradition,
And then, of course, you know, obviously we're talking all about Tokyo and they have everything you would ever want. But when you go to explore the regions outside of Tokyo and you discover some more of those regional dishes, well, there is a whole world out there.
Yeah.
And you mix it with beautiful Japanese beer or Japanese sake.
Is there Japanese wine?
Rice, they do rice wines, obviously, sake, but they also do rice wines, like that they're not made exactly the same way. So our sommelier, Ollie, he's like a sake guy.
Oh, I love sake.
Yeah, so he again, used to work at Taxi many years ago, and he was the sake sommelier there, just a sommelier for sake. And he was saying that there's heaps of different ways of doing... of making sake, and I can't quite exactly remember how it was done. There's a process anyway where they, instead of distilling it in the same way that they do sake, they do it more over like a wine process where they hold everything together, then they strain it off. I'll have to come back to you exactly with how he did it, but it's just incredible the amount of, again, different types of everything there is. And I know they do grow some actual wine on one island off of...
I have heard that too.
Yeah, yeah. One of the islands
sort of
somewhere.
More tropical south.
Yeah, might be.
Pushing towards China.
Yeah. Well, whenever I go, I try to go to a brewery.
Yeah.
And I try to go to a sake brewery because, of course, sake is brewed like beer.
Yeah.
It's more like beer than wine.
Is it really? I had no idea.
Yeah, yep. And then, of course, the many different layers of the way they polish the rice. And I only know one kind of sake. I just go, Junmai Daijingo.
Yeah, Junmai Daijingo. Yeah.
That's a really fine one. It's a little bit more expensive, but, you know, I'm worth it. We've had another listener, some more listener feedback. Thank you.
This is our beautiful Russ, who we miss terribly, but he's listening in.
Russ,
while he's...
How do you know that's Russ? Do you know his phone number off by heart?
Yes, and I'll announce it to everybody. It's 04. No, so Russ's message in. Love the show. Thanks, Russ. It's better when you're here. He wants to know. Russ wants to know, which is better in Tokyo, the robot or the ninja restaurant? Are there many restaurants you can go to for a dress-up and a camp night out?
Well,
it's
they
Japan,
love
yeah.
they love dress up.
They love a dress up and a camp night out.
I
don't know if they've quite got the same crocheted shorts as Russell.
I ended up very late at the Kill Bill restaurant one night, where that's filmed, which is just really like a tourist trap now.
Yeah,
but we ended up there at like 3 a.m. or something. That was with my mate when we were there last time, and. I would steer clear of that one. So I haven't been to the robot restaurant, but I'd steer clear of that one. There's so many better options.
There's the poop restaurant where everything is served in miniature ceramic toilet bowls.
I haven't seen
that one.
And you sit on toilet seats.
Wow.
Not
okay.
For everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that there is something in Japan. I mean, you know, there's a lot of
something for everyone.
Something everyone, all types of fantasies and ideas will all be, yeah, find a home in Tokyo. That's for sure.
In the heart of Harajuku.
That's right, or Shinjuku. I mean, I went to a wacky Halloween party and everyone was up.
Twinsies.
I went with a girlfriend of mine and we were dressed as the twins from The Shining. we had the costumes made before we left, and the great thing was, I mean, there was a mixed audience of Japanese rock and rollers and Australians and a few other gaijin were there as well. But it was so fun when the Japanese guests would look at us and go, "Oh, The Shining!" They laugh their heads off. So we laugh too, of course. It's just a magical place.
It is.
I don't know. I mean, we could just go on forever, really. Well, Mark, I'm just going to thank our guest, who is not going to work today. He's going to be heading home to hang out with Christmas party with his kids. Thank you, Zach.
Oh, it's a kids' Christmas party.
Kids' Christmas, yeah. Kinder Christmas, yeah.
Kinder Christmas. So at least you're not going to have a hangover.
Oh, no, we tacked a bottle of wine.
You've got to have something to help get you through.
Yeah.
From Lucy Lou, thank you so much for coming in, talking about Japan. We'll have you come and talk about Malaysia another time.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.